Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
All right.
I'm unconvinced.
As you should be. Opening my beverage.
I'll open my beverage as well.
Beverages are great.
Yep. They make me happy, so to speak.
What?
That's the name of this beverage. It's called Happy.
Oh, is that
Yeah.
your the fruity thing that you sent me a picture of earlier?
Yes,
What?
juice.
I didn't I just noticed that it had lists of the ingredients and what parts of your body and or personality it fixed.
Yes, so pineapple is for the immune system, apparently. Pear is for fiber. Ginger is for nausea.
Right.
The mint.
Isn't that it causes nausea or prevents it?
See, they're not clear, but I'm gonna just guess that it's not causing. And the mint is for calming. It must be why I feel so calm after I have mojitos. But that's the thing. And then at the bottom it says recommended for pain and stress relief.
Are you in pain and or stressed?
No, but I like pineapple juice and ginger, so it's a good, 1-2 punch.
You like ginger in your drinks? I'm
It's
not sure I do.
got a little kick.
Yeah, it certainly does have that, yes. I always hate when ginger ends up getting diced just a little bit too large in whatever I'm eating, and then you get a big bite of it, and it's unpleasant.
Yeah, well, it's also very fibrous. So it's like you get that spicy kick, and then it's also chewy.
Well, you got pear for your fiber, which I'm a fan of pears. I didn't know there was that much fiber in pears, but I enjoy pears.
Well, I'm not entirely convinced there is a ton of fiber in pears either. I feel like this is one of those things where it's just like, we need a reason. It's like, okay, let's say this thing. Because I don't really think so that it's like the best for fiber.
No, but they're good. I have produce envy, generally speaking, for most people who live in like large cities, because the produce that you can find around here is usually just like rotten and like half a day away from being garbage anyway. So can't really buy a lot of stuff that's actually edible around here. It's very sad.
Do they carry arugula?
Pre-bagged from who knows where.
Yeah, no, I feel for you. I live in a city that is all about the produce, all about the expensive produce. It's fun. Although sometimes I'll walk into like a Whole Foods or something and it'll be like, okay, so I need to get basil. And they'll be like, we don't have any basil. You could buy a basil plant. And I'd be like, are you nuts? Like, why am I adopting a plant? Like, can I just like have a couple leaves or something? Don't you guys sell that? And then sometimes they do. So I'm completely baffled by whatever seasonality is involved in that, where I could buy a plant but not a couple leaves.
Well, it's sort of like a mock cruelty because not only do you get the thing that you wanted, you get to get the plant's hopes up, take it home, and make it feel like you're about to like plant it and give it a nice home, but then you just tear it to shreds and kill it.
Yeah, because see, that's the other thing is like, if you're buying one of those little boxes of basil leaves, it's just like, okay, great. I have the basil I need. And then sure enough, there'll be some stems or whatever and some extra leaves that'll wind up going brown before you can use them and you have to throw it out. But then it's like, well, or I could buy this whole entire plant for exactly the same amount of money, but then I have a whole plant. It's like, I could have it and spend the same amount of money, but then I have to take care of it and deal with whatever its needs are
I mean,
and give it a good
you don't
home.
have to. It's not incumbent upon you to take care of the plant other than just eat it.
Well, I mean, it would also like almost immediately die because basil requires sunlight, and somehow my apartment has sunlight that beats on the roof that makes the building very hot, but no sunlight comes in any of the windows. So you just get bounce light from the building next door, which is a delightful experience because it kills anything that requires sunlight. Although my little the South African succulent, the Hobbit Jade, as it is referred to, is still alive and kicking. Haven't killed that yet.
Well, those don't really need much in the way of light and or water.
No, and I'm not really sure it would be very tasty in a marinara though. So I'll leave it be.
Oh man, macaroons.
Yes, macaroons are delightful.
Some of them are delightful. Macaroons, not so much.
Yeah, well, macarons.
Macaron. Do you think the confusion really stems from the fact that people are too embarrassed to try and like pronounce it properly?
I think it's because it's so similar that most people are like, same thing. And then if you get the two of them side by side, you're like, no, different. One of these is like little beige sawdust balls, and then the other one is absolutely delectable. So I have no idea how that came to be, but it's a thing. I think it has to do with the fact that they're both meringue based, in that they use, you know, egg whites basically for all of the bubbliness that's inside. But there's a big difference.
I think there's maybe one place that I've seen around here that understands the difference and spells it correctly. Most places either spell it wrong and have the actual correct thing, or they think you want the coconutty horrible thing.
Yeah,
I never do. I never do. Macaroons, yeah. I am never in the mood for those.
I just don't like dry coconut in general, so it's never amazing for me.
Mm. Mm. What other food related products can we talk about?
I don't
that's
know.
What apparently our show is about now.
We've covered juice, and we've covered macarons, and I don't know what else we could what other subject is possible to broach. We could talk about fizzy water.
Yeah, I was gonna say we could anger the rest of the internet. We could talk about carbonated waters and condiments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My favorite habanero salsa is back in stock at the local Safeway, which made me very happy.
I generally don't like habanero salsa.
I agree. Generally speaking, it has a bad flavor and or is mixed with some sort of horrible fruit, which is not what you want.
Peach, pineapple, mango.
No, I don't want any of that. I just want it to be spicier than the regular stuff. Spicy with extra spicy, remember?
Yeah. I remember that your tendency is to just take something and add more things to it.
See, no, the local
faster and more intense.
Yes, exactly. The local I don't know what you call it, like sports bar restaurant thingy-mabob. It's a local chain now referred to as Native Grill and Wings because apparently Native New Yorker turned people off, which is what it was called for 15-20 years. They're a big fan of spicy chicken wings, and they have ghost pepper ones on their menu now. And I actually tried them. They didn't put a ton of sauce on them, which is why they weren't unbearable, but I ate them and they were good and I did not die. So now I have also purchased a jar of ghost pepper salsa from the same brand that makes the super spicy habanero salsa. I haven't opened that one yet, but I am looking forward to destroying my stomach with that.
I don't really have those aspirations, although you should have some ginger. It's good for nausea.
Ugh, no. No, the wing place, they went light on it, and I could tell if they were to go a little heavier with the sauce, it probably would have destroyed my face for like a day. But they said, oh yeah, next time, if you want to put a little bit more on there, just order them like extra saucy. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that just so I can find the actual limit of my palate and just hurt myself with some hot wings. Because I enjoy a good spicy hot wing.
We've been over this, but I don't like wings at all. I find them to be an inefficient protein conveyance system.
Well, they also have boneless wings, which, you know, bite-sized chunks of chicken with hot sauce.
Chicken nuggets for grown-ups that don't want to order chicken nuggets.
Uh-huh. Grown-up chicken nuggets slathered in ghost pepper hot sauce.
Yeah. No, also not doing that. Pass. Hard pass.
I'm gonna do it. I did once, but I'm going to do it again. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get it extra spicy. And I'm going to end up in an emergency room or something. I don't know.
Great. I mean, like I've said before, Arizona is just the Florida of the Southwest. So do whatever you want.
Oh, man, the Southwest is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got desert and it's hot and there's cultural appropriation and margaritas.
Did you see that thing that was going around a little bit? I think Williams is the one who retweeted it. It was from the Tuft & Needle mattress people who were kind of a Casper-esque company saying, don't go to Silicon Valley. Come open your startup in Phoenix because it's the best.
I did not see that, but yeah, that that sounds really great.
Their reasons are great. It's rent is cheaper, so they got a nice big building for not a lot of money. There aren't lines at restaurants, and it's cheaper to live here is basically what I saw in their article.
Yeah, well, I mean, shorter version of that, no one wants to be here, so come on down.
Basically, yeah. I mean, as long as your business exists on the internet or through the mail, where you just ship stuff from, purchase from a website, and they have a showroom, apparently, on historic Grand Avenue, which they don't mention is in a really terrible part of town. Yeah, I mean, that's fine, as long as you don't rely on any sort of community of people around you to make your business function.
It's always interesting to me how little thought is put into the fact that whether or not you want to live somewhere might impact the kind of people that you could get to work for your company.
No, you just hire them from other states. You just bring them in here, and then it's totally the same thing.
Yeah, not so much, but it's all about the, you know, the work culture.
Right.
You know, somebody brings in a sheet cake for somebody's birthday, mm-hmm. or they don't do that at all, and they have mandatory company events. And you can have some chips and salsa to celebrate special occasions. I have no idea. I mean, these business culture always creeps me out anytime that it's like an event and things of that nature. So the idea that you would move someplace just to be around your business and then that's it in some desert, maybe that really would not satisfy me.
Yeah, I mean, there are other points were similar in that, like, you know, there's not a whole lot of competition, so you can get a write-up in a newspaper and get publicized, and they've got billboards all around town, which I'm sure are much cheaper than buying a billboard in San Francisco or something, or if they have billboards near San Francisco. But of course it is, because, like you said, there's nobody else here, really.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically Sony's argument back when they had the Albuquerque, New Mexico studio, was they were getting the enormous outsized tax incentives in order to open that studio there and staff it up with people. They had a very hard time convincing people to go live there, and then the incentives went away and there was not really anywhere for anyone else to go, and so they left. It was a good data center for a while, apparently, but I don't know if I would necessarily come to the conclusion that just because no one else is there, it's a good sign. But you gotta start somewhere. You gotta found things somehow. You keep carrying on until you got the momentum, I suppose.
That's certainly one way to look at it, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I was a bit of a downer there. because also I was just recently reading a blog post that I wrote last year about the wonderful layoffs that DreamWorks did and closure of their studio in Northern California.
I forget, was that before or after Obama came to DreamWorks to talk about how awesome they all are?
That was after he came and talked about how awesome they all were. And it was 5 months before the layoffs, Jeffrey Katzenberg also got a presidential medal for his contributions to the arts. So he's, you know, it's great, great stuff. And then recently, you know, the reason
what has he contributed to the arts in the past couple of weeks? Anything in particular?
A merger. He's he's a business acquisition. Because I don't think it's technically a merger. I think it's an acquisition. He's been trying to shop around his company for years, because it is difficult to run and it costs a lot of money. But he kind of wants somebody to buy it and then still run it. So nobody really wanted to buy it from him. But the Hollywood Reporter got a little behind the scenes take that there was word spreading that some investor from China was going to buy DreamWorks. And so then suddenly Comcast was interested in it. And they very quickly hammered out a deal in a matter of a week to acquire DreamWorks. And that went about, that came about, pretty quick, after being basically like secretly for sale for many, 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 many years. Yeah.
That's, I mean, even if you ignore all of the history with DreamWorks and their financial woes and layoffs and the sort of pretending that the business is more robust than it actually is, selling DreamWorks to Comcast just makes you feel all kinds of dirty, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't really feel positively about this maneuver. Good positive note, Jeffrey Katzenberg will not be in charge of the film unit anymore. I don't think he was bringing anything good to the table any longer. That much is pretty evident in how we can interpret the market performance of the films over time, which have not been positive, and well, the financial woes of the company.
DreamWorks Animation specifically, right? Not all of DreamWorks.
Well, DreamWorks only exists as an imprint that Paramount has, I think, right now. Because Spielberg isn't even a part of it anymore, because it was originally founded with Spielberg, Katzenberg, and David Geffen. And that was why it was called DreamWorks SKG. And then that all fell apart. What was it, 2002, 2004? That came apart at the seams. DreamWorks itself was acquired by Paramount, and DreamWorks Animation was spun off as a separate company. And now Spielberg has founded Amblin. What was it, Amblin Imprint or Amblin Partners? It's Amblin Partners. Founded Amblin Partners, and that's at Universal. And this acquisition is at Universal. So now Spielberg and Katzenberg are back together, sort of, kind of.
But it's a reunion. Hooray.
Yeah, in a weird, weird way. I'm sure they get along swell at parties. But yeah, it's very peculiar. But yeah, the dream of DreamWorks is dead.
I was going to say, you don't have any positive feelings about at least the fact that DreamWorks now has a large financial backer, that maybe they'll start trying to take some risks and do some new stuff and hire some people and make some movies, even if they're not any better or something?
No, they're penny-pinching financial backers. So it doesn't inspire me.
But they're going to make so much money from monetizing all of those branded characters.
The IP. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. the problem is that they have rested on their laurels of that intellectual content that they've had for a really long time, and they can't really entice people to go take a chance on any new DreamWorks stuff by saying, like, from the producers of Shrek or something at the start of a movie, or from the producers of Madagascar at the start of a movie, because people are like, you know, fool me four times, shame on you.
How long ago was Shrek at this point? Was that in the 90s, or did that make it into the early 2000s?
The first Shrek movie was released in 2001.
Okay, so it was close.
May of 2001. The second Shrek was 2004, May of 2004. So if I'm looking at the adjusted ticket price inflation, the performance of these films, Shrek 2 is at the top, then Shrek, and then Shrek the Third, and then fourth place is Madagascar, then 5, Shrek Forever, or Shrek Forever After. Like, how is anyway? Whatever.
That's the fourth one.
Yeah, that's the fifth one.
Oh,
so
okay.
You're out of the 5 so far. We have 4 Shrek movies and one non-Shrek movie, and then you get to 6 and you got Kung Fu Panda, 7 How to Train Your Dragon, 8 Madagascar 3 Europe's Most Wanted, 9 Monsters vs. Aliens, and 10 Shark Tale, believe it or not, which was largely seen as an enormous flop in its time, but they got floppier apparently, because
didn't have Will Smith in it.
Yeah, that was he was the titular character. He was not a shark though, so I don't know. Anyway, I never saw it. It didn't inspire me to go to the box office seeing the posters and the trailers. So, yeah.
What was their last movie? Did they do...
Last movie was Kung Fu Panda 3, which was January of this year.
Kung Fu Panda 3. That's the one with... Okay, I remember seeing all the commercials with all the panda kids.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, was it a ghost water buffalo? I have no idea what was happening.
Couldn't tell. I haven't. there were jokes about food. There were some dumplings and some noodles, which, you know, cartoon dumplings always look delicious. Probably just because dumplings are delicious.
Dumplings are delicious. Yeah. Although it always, when I was first hearing them described as dumplings, I kept thinking of the German dumplings, and I was like, I don't want to eat those. But then it's like, oh, you mean those things, the little stuff inside. And I was like, those are delicious. I love them. So yeah, you know, yeah, a little Xiaolong Bao, you know, Din Tai Fung. It's great stuff.
Mm-hmm. There's one place around here that has some good stuff like that. Although it's one of those places, again, similar to the Waffle House, where don't look around when you're inside, lest you lose your appetite.
Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome. You're welcome. If you want good dumplings, go there. But just don't look around. That's all I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
It's good.
Anyway, their worst performing movie ever was Sinbad, The Legend of the Seven Seas, which was one of their few traditionally animated ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the guy with the mustache and the long hair, and he sailed and stuff.
Yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer was the bad guy.
really?
Yeah.
Who played Sinbad?
I don't remember. Oh, it was Brad Pitt.
Oh, that's right.
Brad Pitt. The writer was John Logan, you know, back in his Gladiator writer can do anything days. Those didn't last. You know, also wrote Star Trek Nemesis, which is terrible. But in any event, I'm basically describing that they have had a very hard time getting people to turn out to go see DreamWorks movies in recent years, and that their best days have definitely been behind them financially. So, you know, it's not all rosy and amazing. Now they have some slightly better films that didn't quite crack that top 10 of their best box office openings. And I'm sorry, those are total box office grosses adjusted. So like Home wasn't really bad. I saw it on an airplane.
That's the one with what's his name from the Big Bang.
Yeah, the Sheldon guy. That wasn't really bad. It wasn't amazing, but it was better than expected. But you know, they in Megamind was okay.
Well, third wasn't act that was bad. I remember that.
Yeah, and so it's like they can do and a lot of people say nice things about the Croods, but I just can't bring myself to watch it because I think they look so hideous. But they have a lot of stuff in their repertoire that they've done that could have performed well, but for one reason or another, people didn't want to really like spend the money to go see it. It seems that was one of the things that doomed Peabody and Sherman. It didn't seem like it got especially bad reviews or anything, but that nobody just really wanted to go watch it. And that's where we're at with them. Fun fact about the Kung Fu Panda 3 thing that I was just mentioning.
Mm.
They're the 23rd in the list of their adjusted grosses for how they performed, and that's $141 million so far. So it's not all great stuff.
What's the average budget of an animated feature these days?
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're looking at something like Illumination Entertainment, which Universal already owned, that is much lower because they do all of their work at an overseas place where they can get different rates. And
well, let's say like a DreamWorks film. How much are they spending on movies versus bringing in?
Oh, okay. Well, that's a fair question. So an example, like you said, of budgets is $141 million to earn domestically, but it costs $145 million to make, and it earned a total of $504 million if you include the international market. So it's not a failure in any stretch of the imagination.
But it's barely profitable by standards these days. I mean,
this has caused a lot of analysts to weigh in on DreamWorks as saying their movies cost too much to make, which is not really a statement that I would make. I would say that their movies need to be better to make more money. And I think that is more due to a story, which costs less than artists. But
certainly, if they're comparing like what, you know, the rest of the movie industry these days, you know, movies are between 100 and 200, sometimes more $1 million for the big ones. And then you got the small ones, but there really aren't like micro budget animated features, obviously, because there's just too much work involved. So it's, you're playing it only in those, like the risky territory up high with the big budget, but you don't have the smaller bets that could potentially supplement any issues that you have with, you know, your big bets, which live action features and studios do have, which I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about the animated feature sort of genre these days at all. It seems like none of them are really performing as well as they would like. You think that's all still story stuff, or are people starting to lose their taste for it a little bit?
I think it is definitely less special than it used to be back in the late 90s. But just to quickly go off on something that you had mentioned earlier, just to compare Illumination versus DreamWorks for a recent release, in terms of the money that it costs to make, their budget is estimated to be $74 million for Minions. And, you know, you compare that to $145 million for DreamWorks for their production. Yeah.
What did Minions bring in? Probably a comparable or higher number, I would imagine.
Yeah, the domestic gross is $336 million. So a lot higher. But I think that has more to do with the fact that people wanted to go see the Minions movie.
For sure.
Not everyone, obviously, because a lot of people are just like, oh my God, these yellow things away from me. But that's...
Even in spite of the fact that it turned off like 2 out of 5 people when they were marketing it because they were everywhere, they still managed to do a lot better than something like Kung Fu Panda, which you would think is probably a safe bet because the original one was pretty good. And then, I don't know, I never saw the second one, but they apparently made enough to make a third one.
Yep. And it's one of those things where it's just like they're doing okay-ish, but not great. And whenever they have big flops, they have big flops, like Rise of the Guardians, which is
the one with the owls.
No, you're thinking of the Guardians of Gwahul or whatever the banana's name of that was. That was not them. Mm. Yeah, the Rise of the Guardians was the one with like all of the Tooth Fairy and Jack Frost and Santa and stuff or like superheroes.
Did I entirely miss that one?
You missed it. I didn't watch it. But if you just quickly look at the character designs, you'll be like, oh God, this is actually kind of frightening. I don't know why they made that movie. But it was something they made. It not good, very not good.
I mean, it has Chris Pine, Alec Baldwin, Jude Law, Isla Fisher, Hugh Jackman in it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting looking characters. It's These look like Sasquatches with man buns. It's like they pushed a little bit closer to realism, but they're still dancing the line with Uncanny Valley a little bit. And then you got this weird like little hedgehog looking dude.
It's not good. It's really...
Is that supposed to be the Easter Bunny?
Yeah, isn't that
this
scary?
Like, buff dude with the big shoulders and like this like messenger bag with colors on it. Mm-hmm. Why does he look so angry? If I saw that in my room or in my house, I would be terrified.
Mm.
Yeah. What is this thing that looks like a peacock person?
Oh, I think that's the Tooth Fairy.
Oh God, it is the Tooth Fairy. She's looking in his mouth. That's so creepy. Why?
I have no idea.
But why did they make the Tooth Fairy a hummingbird?
Why did they do anything that they did? Needless to say, no one really was super enticed to watch this, and it did not necessarily do well on home video because about it is creepy and weird.
Is this their attempt to make something that's like fun and friendly, but like darker and grittier, like movies
apparently
are these days?
Yeah, it's like, you don't know the secret truth of the Easter Bunny.
Oh
now
man, Santa
learn.
Has a holographic globe, kind of like in Prometheus, where he's like pointing at stuff.
Yeah, they have a whole secret headquarters that's in their the trailer for this, and like the Sandman and stuff. It's just I can't explain it. I don't know how this was ever like interpreted as a good idea in production, but it
Santa,
was.
Santa,
they made it. So.
Santa has forearm tattoos. One forearm says naughty, and the other says nice.
Uh huh. I bet he got that, you know, in prison with the pen.
What do his knuckles say? Milk and cookies.
Cookies is too long. You just spell cook. It can't be milk and cook.
You could find an abbreviation.
CKES.
Just yeah. a cookie emoji.
Oh, and then it's not four. Okay, so you put four cookie emojis.
Yeah, exactly. Four is his four favorite cookies: chocolate chip, sugar cookie, and why can't I think? The one with the cinnamony stuff starts with an S.
Snickerdoodle.
Snickerdoodle. I like a snickerdoodle.
Everybody likes snickerdoodle. Not everybody. I'm just saying that because I like it. So you have to.
Yeah. There's a
canonical
little,
cookie flavors.
Yeah, let's not. There's a goofy little place that opened up in downtown Chandler that sells like artisanal ice cream cookie sandwiches. You pick your two cookies. They can be different flavors. There's like four total cookies. And then you pick the ice cream that goes in between. And then you can put like varying things on the sides. And you got this gigantic, delicious, fresh ice cream cookie. It's very, very tasty. I did a one sugar cookie, one snickerdoodle with like some salted caramel ice cream in it. It was really tasty.
That's nice. We have a thing called Cool House in LA where they started as a truck. And then they had a second truck. And then they opened up a storefront in Culver City, and now they have like a satellite truck, not a satellite that drives, but just a truck that's further away. That's in New York, and so all the New Yorkers are like, "Oh wow, we've invented Cool House," and it's like, "Yeah, whatever, guys." But they have this whole thing where they have ice cream that they put between their little custom cookies, and they sometimes do weird, wacky things. And they're the ones who have the bananas Foster that is absolutely delicious.
Hmm.
You can buy that at the grocery store now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They've expanded. They sold out to the man. Similar to DreamWorks, and we're back.
It's a good segue.
Is there any hope for the future of DreamWorks, or what do you think? What's going to happen next?
I think everything's going to stay exactly the same for a while. And then once the deal goes through, then there are going to be some evaluations of redundant departments that can be removed. And something tells me that campus is not really going to stick around forever. Katzenberg already sold it and leased it back, which is not as weird as it sounds. Companies do that a lot in order to get operational cash stuff. It's still not a good sign, but he sold it and leased it back. I don't know if Universal is interested in maintaining a property if they don't keep people there, and I don't know if they will keep people there. They might decide to move Illumination Entertainment over there, like all the story people and stuff, not the animators because they're in another country, but they might decide to turn that into where they house animation. I just don't know if they necessarily would fill it up like they used to in the old days of when they were doing much better, and I don't know what it means for what they're going to do with like contracts and current employees and things of that nature, because I can imagine that there are some people who might have been there for a long time and who were quite expensive. And frequently when they do these kinds of acquisitions, they get rid of really expensive people or people who have been there a long time who might not be receptive to new ways of doing things, and they replace them with more receptive, cheaper people, or they do away with their department. So it'll be weird to see what they wind up doing, because DreamWorks also has... it's not just about Glendale. They have their branch that they call Oriental DreamWorks, which I probably wouldn't have called it that. But that's in China, and they have their whole separate thing that's going on over there. So now Universal has to deal with owning that, too. There's also the DreamWorks Digital, which is doing the Awesomeness TV and whatever. They're mainly doing the 3D animated stuff for Netflix. And Katzenberg is still staying on for that. So he's taking that sort of like sidestep down from being in charge of animation to do that over there. And Chris is taking over all of the animation, which is better than Katzenberg being in charge of it. But it's also going to cause things like delays, because he's going to be giving notes now on all the things Katzenberg already gave notes on, and it's definitely not going to be smooth. Because think about the transition when Disney bought Pixar, and then John Lasseter and Ned Catmull were put over the Disney feature animation guys. And so then they go in there and they start giving notes on things. Now, they kept both of those as separate operating studios that Lasseter and Ned Catmull oversee both, but I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case where Illumination is going to continue on to do its stuff and DreamWorks is going to continue on to do its stuff. You know, there's the other alternative that they definitely don't need to do that, especially since they might move DreamWorks IP over and release it underneath Illumination Entertainment name, because like, who really will care at that point? It'll be like, here's your new Kung Fu Panda 4 from Illumination Entertainment. It's like no one's gonna notice or care.
The DreamWorks name still has a decent amount of cachet, just because people, like, probably because they can't name the last DreamWorks movie, they're still like, oh yeah, that's that big animation studio.
I mean, I think it has cachet, but like in a historical sense. Like, you know, for Shrek and for Madagascar and like those sorts of things and Kung Fu Panda. But, you know, honestly, would it make that big of a difference if they released it with something else in front of it? You look at like Iron Man, which was released under Paramount with their logo out front. And then, you know, he's been in all these movies with Disney Castle stuff. So it's like, does it really even matter now if they move it from one place to another? I don't think so. I think people show up for whether or not they want to see the thing and like how much marketing is jammed at their children. So that'll be the biggest determining factor. And honestly, it's probably going to be better for getting DreamWorks movies distributed, because Universal will take over distribution from Fox when the deal with Fox expires, because the deal with Fox hasn't been tremendously amazing for DreamWorks. They don't distribute their own stuff. They have to go through another person. Previously, before Fox, it was Paramount. But Fox can even do things like say, pass on this for this year. We'll release it. We'll distribute it next year, which can totally screw up DreamWorks' internal planning, which is something they did last summer, I want to say, where they delayed something from one calendar year to another for distribution. I have no idea what their contract is that lets them make these kinds of calls, but apparently that had occurred. That wouldn't necessarily be happening underneath Universal. They could also do things like coordinate their releases. So Illumination Entertainment is not releasing movies that overlap with DreamWorks Entertainment, DreamWorks Animation. So just much in the same way that Pixar doesn't overlap with Disney feature.
I mean, I guess all of the things you just described about sort of the business benefits of it are probably what they were talking about when they actually did the whole acquisition, and it seems to make sense and stuff, but it still doesn't seem to bode well. I think you're
I'm just saying from their point of view, these are the positives. I'm
I think focus this, on some sort of positive, don't
yeah
they?
I think this is all poop.
So it's safe to say you wouldn't take a job at DreamWorks Animation if it was offered to you?
Well, I mean, I don't think they would offer me one after well, if they ever looked at anything I've ever said about them. But it used to be a desirable place to work. And in 2005, when I was graduating college, it was a big deal to go work at DreamWorks, just as big of a deal as it was to go work anywhere else. It wasn't bad to go work for DreamWorks. And then, you know, you flash forward a few years and you talk to people who work at DreamWorks, and they talk about how creatively unfulfilling it is, but they like their job in terms of work hours and stuff like that, because they had a standard 45-hour week where they worked 9 hours a day, and there was, you know, the free food and the perks and the benefits and all that stuff, and so they could deal with how sort of soul-crushing the bureaucracy and stuff was, because they had just sort of a regular schedule and an easy life compared to people who were at the VFX houses, like in Los Angeles at the time, where you might be in total crunch and there were, you know, fears about layoffs and project to project hires and stuff like that. And it's just like, nope, I'm on my, you know, 2 or 3 year contract doing my thing, even though I don't enjoy it. So whatever. And that was something that was a positive for working there for a long time as well. And I don't know what the positives necessarily are going to be after this merger. Cause morale can't possibly be very high. Last year you got your PDI closure and all this stuff, and then this year you got this merger, this acquisition, and you have management changes, and they're going to be making story changes. It's just like, even internally, if they weren't going to fire you, I don't know if you'd necessarily want to stay. Yeah.
Well, in terms of the creatively unfulfilling stuff, like I wonder how much these days DreamWorks is like Pixar, in as much as the employees of Pixar really seem to take ownership of the films, and they're really sort of invested in the them doing well when they come out. Not just because, you know, they want to make sure the company doesn't fold or something. You know, it's like we put our energy into this. We really like it. We want everyone else to like it, so we want it to succeed. I wonder what the sentiment at DreamWorks is like with regard to that kind of stuff, because they still are sort of playing on that level of, you know, developing their own IP and sort of, you know, spending a lot of time and energy building these gigantic movies, and they want people to like them, presumably. Or has that sort of I show up, do my job, and go home mentality filtered down into their opinion of the product as well?
I haven't talked to anyone who's recently left the company, but back when there were some earlier purges, people kind of know they're working on a mediocre film, and that frustrates them that there's mediocrity, and they would like it to be a better product, and that they see the ways in which it could be a better product, but it's not coming together. And so that, I think, is something that does weigh heavily on the people that work at your company. And I don't know if that necessarily would improve with this change, or if it's already like degraded to the point where it won't even matter if these people aren't going to be there, sadly. So we'll just see. I have to see how it shakes out. But it's a very dramatic and very large shift. So
I mean, I think the most positive outlook one could take is like, okay, now the day to day business stuff is sort of taken care of. Now that we're purchased by this giant conglomerate, we don't have to stress about that stuff as much. And there's going to be less overall stress in the facility around here, because presumably the people crunching the numbers and worrying about that kind of stuff are somewhere else. So now we're free a little bit to do our own thing and, you know, kind of take a breath. And while, yes, we still have the same constraints with regard to how often and people are going to the movies and all that stuff with relation to animated films and, you know, just the difficulty they have getting something in front of people anyway, but now they have a little bit less to worry about since somebody else is sort of worrying about that stuff for them. Hopefully people are going to look at it and think that and say, all right, let's see what we can come up with, rather than now it's just the same crap and we have more people showing up to tell us how to do our jobs.
Well, they also have, Jeff Shell, did an interview. He's the head of NBC Universal, by the way. I didn't know who that was before either, but just thought I'd say that. So Jeff Shell did an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, who has The Hollywood Reporter, for whatever reason, seems to have the insight on almost all of this news that's been dropping. So don't go read the Variety stuff, I suppose, because they'll just be referring to this other thing. But The Hollywood Reporter's interview talks to him about, you know, like the culture and whether or not they're going to be changing things. He's like, we're going to take a really long, hard look before we change anything. So like I said, like for months, I don't think anything's going to change. And so that might not have any impact. And so people might feel fine because all of the things are going to keep rolling along. But there is sort of a Damocles aspect to this, where it's like, you know, that eventually something bad is going to happen because something's going to change in some way. And it might be positive or it might be negative, and you don't know what it is because you're waiting until that change occurs. Hopefully you could, you know, optimistically say that maybe they'll evaluate for a long time and do all of the things necessary in order to improve the working environment, in order to build the morale back up and make everybody think that this is going to go along great and that they'll get along great with everyone and that they're feeling like an integrated part of Universal, but not in a bureaucratic, oppressed sense. So it'll take some time for this to all shake out in a way that will really make any sense. But in that intervening time, even if everything's moving along at a fast clip and ordinary things are happening ordinarily, then you still know that something's going to happen eventually. Anyway, it's just bright sunshine.
Yeah,
that I'm sharing.
If it's like any of the mergers and or corporate restructurings that I've ever been a part of, it'll probably take about a year for a year. Well, based on the size of the organization, maybe a year or two for the parent organization to sort of get their hands around what everything is and understand it. And then probably right around then there will be some drastic, probably unpleasant changes.
Yeah, because you also have to think about the movies that they have in production already. Because DreamWorks has things that they're planning for several years out. So it's not like they have a completely empty slate where they're just going to like drop everything and retool it. Like they have stuff that's in progress already to be released. There's like Captain Underpants or whatever that's going to be. And there's
what?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of the things. This is Captain Underpants. It was delayed. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Is that the one that got pushed by the distributor?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a rough position to be when you make like one, two movies a year and the distributor can tell you like, nah, not really. I'm not going to do it this year.
Yeah, that's going to be weird. But congratulations to Jeffrey Katzenberg, who will make more money, but and who has a medal, and who has impacted the arts so positively. Good for him.
I hear he's a fan of the sausage and fennel pizza at Pizzeria Mozza.
Oh well, I'll never order it again.
I think he said something like he likes to put extra sausage or something on it.
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Some fun trivia for you. Some fun local trivia for you, since we're all in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's where all the best produce is. And apparently, and sausage.
And pizza.
Mm-hmm. People love our sausage, that's what they say.
Los Angeles, come for mm-hmm. the robust film industry, stay for the sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Well.
Is there anything positive that we can end on? Anything, I don't know, is there anything industry related that's ever positive? Any movies you're looking forward to actually seeing?
Well, Roe v. bought TiVo, and they're going to change their name from Roe v. to TiVo. So,
right, I saw that. Who's Roe v.?
They make interactive programming guides and stuff, basically.
Hmm.
So, you know, it doesn't matter. But they had money from doing those things, and TiVo did not. Because TiVo is a bit of a garbage fire when it comes to innovation and making things, and their ridiculous box that is not flat, that has a kink in it. So I don't know what they're doing. But they have a very peculiar hardware business at TiVo, so it'll be interesting to see if they keep any of that, or if they're just going to turn into a software-only company, because Roe v. does not do hardware, or if this is all about the hardware and they really want to have their own, you know, special box. I don't think they do.
Maybe you'll finally see TiVo on the Apple TV.
No, I don't think that's how that works, Dan.
They could make an app
that does what?
records your favorite programs from your
from my what?
From your subscription.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, no, they're doomed. I mean, yay.
Wouldn't be any worse than the stock DirecTV stuff.
What was that?
I said it couldn't be any worse than the stock DirecTV software.
Oh, you mean for the Genie?
I think I can't remember. I think I have a Genie. Yeah, but it's one of those ones that, you know, it's two and a half years old now, so it's incredibly slow, and like half the time. Well, not half the time, but like last night I turned it on and the picture didn't show up. So it required a full reset, which is one of those things that says like just a few more seconds and shows you like eight different screens that say just a few more seconds. And it really takes like 15 minutes to reboot the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. See, Jason has the DirecTV box. And if we fast forward and hit play, sometimes the audio doesn't come back on.
Yeah, that's the other bug. That's fun.
Yeah, I was like, this is an interesting problem to have. And so what you do is you skip back 10 seconds with the skip back button, and then you hit play again, and then it works. Just going backwards will kick the audio stream back in. I don't know why, but
I'll have to try that, because sometimes there are channels that won't have audio where another one will, or like none of them will have audio, or sometimes you'll have audio and no picture. But regardless, the interface, it's just, it's excruciatingly slow, and it just gets slower by the day.
Okay. That sounds like a lot of things in your life, Dan.
It's great. It's great. And it costs a lot of money, too, so that's really important.
You should threaten to go to a competitor. You should say, I'm gonna buy a Sling TV.
See, I would, but you have to actually call them on the phone. They're also one of those companies that, like, we signed up for all the movie channels when we first got it, because of course you do, and, you know, keep the free trial or whatever, it's fine. And you can manage, like, your actual package of channels through the website, but to cancel any of the premium channels, you actually have to actually call them on the phone, which I'm just not going to do.
Yeah. I can call them.
Which is why I continue to pay for all of their movie channels and Creative Cloud, because I'm just not going to call them.
If you just send the info to me, I'll call on your behalf for you.
really upset and grumpy about how much it costs?
I'm Dan Sturm. I don't like real maple syrup. It's not worth the money. So I'm canceling my subscription so I can afford more high fructose corn syrup.
No, I can't afford the real maple syrup because I spend all that money on DirecTV every month.
Yes, but you also don't like it because it costs too much.
No, I told you the last thing, I got some actual legitimate maple syrup at Costco in a large jug.
Okay.
It says maple right on the thing.
No, they can't lie about that. No, they can't. Not at Costco. Where is it sourced? What's the DOC? What appellation is it from?
The mountains of Himalayas. I don't know. I don't. I have no idea. I didn't look at it. It just said maple, and it was a large jug. And I'm like, yeah, there you go.
Uh huh. Okay.
Pretty sure it's Kirkland Signature.
Oh well, Kirkland would never sign anything that was bad. It's just a known fact about Kirkland.
Sure. Mm-hmm. They've also got that, $1,500 bottle of scotch that has the Kirkland Signature logo on it, which is just so terrible.
I don't like their logo. I don't know why they don't know that their logo looks ugly. Do they not hire anyone to look at those sorts of things?
Well, it's, you know, they designed it once. And they don't want to spend any money on redesigning it so they can pass the savings on to the customer.
Oh, yeah. Well, if they buy the designs in bulk, then they could save money. And there was actually a kind of vaguely interesting CNBC documentary on Costco at one point. They even had a segment about how Costco goes about purchasing their wines. And they have this executive, she goes around and samples all these different wines to try. They bring in different things. She samples them. They try to bargain to get good rates on good ones, because she also doesn't want to get bad wines to bring in, apparently. They made a big deal about that. And they have all this stuff for this other executive who was in charge of the toys for Christmas. And they basically have this conference room where everyone brings in their stuff and sets it up on tables for different toys that they could sell at Costco. And it'll be in June for Christmas. And so the guy walks through and, you know, says they like this toy or they don't like this toy. And they evaluate every single one of them, and they slowly eliminate toys from the room until they're left with a couple toys that they actually want to sell. And so you have no idea what they're going to do. And it's just you watch this and you're just like, this is actually sort of vaguely interesting, because you wouldn't assume any thought went into any of this stuff at all, because it just sort of seems like they just get whatever they get that has a deal. Because they even interviewed the founder of Costco, who was making a big deal about the hot dogs. I would never eat a Costco hot dog, because he goes on to talk about how it's very important to him that he keep the price exactly as it used to be. So I don't know what they do to make things not inflate in cost, and I don't want to know.
Buy them in big enough bulk. They're $1.29 or $1.99 or something.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's like about, you know, a dollar and change. It just doesn't inspire confidence when it's like, what did you do so that you could meet this price target?
That's a pretty competent hot dog. I had one, I don't know, it's probably been like a year and a half now, but it was pretty good.
Yes, I'm sure it was only the best eyelids that went into that hot dog.
Well, I mean, how's that different than anywhere else? At least Costco is kind of honest about it. At least you're eating in a warehouse where it's sort of commensurate with the quality of the food.
I don't know. Minced meats weird me out these days. I try to avoid, unless I can get it from a reputable source.
You're one of those fancy all beef hot dog people, or what do you eat? Like kale hot dogs out there in Los Angeles?
No, but they have the Neiman Ranch and some other place that's like only the finest organic Kobe beef or something. And they're expensive, as you might imagine. But puts my mind at ease.
That's got to be Kobe style beef because they can't actually claim.
Yes.
Unless each hot dog is imprinted with a serial number on it.
That'd be funny. But
might be a little bit more disconcerting.
Yeah.
Why does my hot dog have a serial number? Is that a social security number?
That would be, you could tell at least like which hot dogs were which, like when they're coming off the grill, you could be like, oh, give me a 51729. I'd like to try that one.
that's horrifying.
Yeah. You'd be like, this was a good cow. I'm going to keep some of these in the freezer. No, I have no idea.
Let me get 6 dozen from cow number 512.
You look like you taste good. Let's chop that one up. No, I have no idea how they do any of this stuff, but it puts my mind at ease a little sometimes when I buy things that are very expensive. Because I'm like, they can't possibly put horrible things in this because I'm paying so much money. It has to be amazing.
I mean, placebo effect is a real thing. So, I mean, if it works for you, it works.
Yeah. The real test is like, what, 5 years after when the prions kick in or whatever? That'll be horrifying. It's a little fear of mine.
I don't know what you just said.
Oh, mad cow disease, the little prions.
Oh, right. I thought you were talking about the Priory of Sion.
Oh, no. I was not doing that.
It's the thing from that book that was in the Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't. That was not something I was bringing up ever.
So the origins of Jesus Christ have nothing to do with your hot dogs.
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, Hebrew National, you know, they have the kosher hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
I hear those are good, but they're always what, like they're always like an extra $4 or something. The packages, I mean.
Well, I mean, do you not want kosher hot dogs, Dan?
Well, I don't care. I like I think I like the ballpark ones. You know, they plump when you cook them, or so they say.
Also weird. But whatever.
They have all beef versions of those.
Well, you know, I don't want to sound too judgmental because there is technically that time that I went to a baseball game when my sister's boyfriend, who she's not married to, when they were out here, he took us all to go see a Dodgers game, which even though I'd been out here for like 8 years and hadn't ever bothered to go do that. So I sat there on some really hard benches, and it was apparently like Dodger dog day, which was a thing. And so each Dodger dog was a dollar. Mm-hmm. And I was horribly ill. So that was a thing. I ate a lot of those.
How many did you eat?
I think I had 3 or 4.
Oh, that's nothing.
Well, Dodger dogs are long. They're long and skinny. They're not they're not the big fat kind. And so you know, it didn't have the girth really. So it felt like you weren't having that many. But the length of it is very important.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I told you about the special seats in the Diamondbacks Park where you can get all you can eat hot dogs.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's great. It's like $36, I think, maybe per ticket, or maybe I can't remember if that was per ticket or for two tickets. But you get like those stupid like boxes of popcorn, which they're just, you know, they buy the boxes empty and fill them up with just cheap popcorn. And then you get like half bottles of water, like the little short stubby ones. And I think there's a soda fountain and then just all the hot dogs you can eat. I think I ate 6 of them and just so much sodium. It was just my fingers were very swollen.
Yeah, well, it's also the nitrates and nitrites. Mm-hmm. So it was good stuff.
Delicious.
So it makes it so pink.
I think one of the guys there ate like 12 of them, though, so he would be worse off than I was.
Ugh.
It was delicious. Watched a baseball game. I think we may have probably lost, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we all lost because I ate 6 hot dogs.
Yeah. I mean, no one there was a winner. But the hot dogs always make me think of that show that you don't watch with The Simpsons, where Lisa was going to be a vegetarian. And, well, she does wind up being a vegetarian. But spoiler alert for that episode, you're never going to watch. And there is like the mental picture of like what goes into a hot dog. And it's like a boot and a raccoon and a squirrel or something. And it all just like collides into and this puff of smoke and makes a hot dog. So it's just... Lovely.
Yeah, the mental image of what goes into any of our food, probably horrifying.
Yeah. You don't want to know how the sausage is made, as they say. Just like how you don't want to know how the sausage is made at DreamWorks. Which Jeffrey Katzenberg orders extra amounts of on top of his mozza pizza.
Mm-hmm. Fennel and sausage. I assume they still have that one on the menu, don't they?
I assume so. I haven't been in a couple months. Don't really get over to the area very often.
What are you talking about? It's like 5 minutes from you.
Well, more like 20. And you gotta like park on Highland Avenue, and then you gotta walk in.
But
and
they
then
have
you gotta,
complimentary
you gotta
valet. I am doing air quotes with my fingers.
Their valet stand is always a bit of a disaster, so I don't really do that.
You mean the way it backs up like six cars deep into the middle of the road?
Yeah, that doesn't doesn't inspire confidence. But most of the time there's parking on that street. You just gotta pay attention to the signs. So I do that.
Street signs in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Scary world.
I thought we were trying to end on a positive note. Mm-hmm. But
I like that pizza. I want some pizza now.
I want pizza too.
Spicy hot wings go great with pizza.
I was thinking of ordering a Turkish paide, which is the Turkish version of pizza.
What is it called?
It's P-I-D-E. So I think it's paide or pide.
How is Turkish pizza different than regular pizza?
It's sort of like boat shaped.
It's oblong.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a football, really.
Oh, so it comes up on the sides too?
Yep. And then in the middle of it is different cheese and usually like za'atar and stuff. And
so
it's seasonings.
It's like a football shaped bread type bowl that has cheeses in it.
Well, it's not like super bowl shaped. I mean.
It's not big game shaped.
Yes.
You can't say that. You can't say the thing you said.
Yeah, you can't say that. we'll get sued by the NFL. Who cares so much about that?
I think that might have been the dumbest joke I've ever made. Well, anyway, go on. It's boat shaped. It's a shallow boat, but it's full of cheeses.
It's a shallow football boat full of different cheese. I don't know what to tell you. It's just different. It's slightly different. But you look at it and you go, oh, it's just an oblong pizza.
Oh, well, if you order one, you'll have to send me a photo after the Postmates guy gets there.
Well, I'm probably not going to do that because I'm trying to eat healthy. Mm. I went to this place called Locali and I had a turkey sandwich that was a turkey Reuben, which was mostly sauerkraut. It was tasty, but I ate mostly sauerkraut. So I feel like I did a good enough job on vegetables for some reason. And then there was the juice. So, I got a lot of positive, good energy going. And
that's
then
good stuff. You should totally cancel it out by ordering like some Domino's or Pizza Hut.
I don't order either one of those, but then I had an acai bowl this morning too for breakfast.
That's that that dark colored fruit that makes your teeth all weird colors.
Yeah, but I mean, they usually mix it with other stuff, so it's not actually that much acai in it. It's mostly like you're just having like a fruit smoothie slash frozen yogurt, basically. There's no dairy in it. It's just like a fruit smoothie, but they put stuff on top like it as if it were frozen yogurt. So you feel like you're having a dessert for breakfast.
Gotta love dessert for breakfast.
Yep. Just like you gotta love Kirkland's signature maple syrup.
In bulk.